Elementary music teacher friend, you love what you do, but you might feel unappreciated and, in fact, unseen some days. You may even feel like you're on a music teacher island and just want to connect with other music teachers who can relate to both your struggles and wins when it comes to teaching elementary music. I get you and understand completely the feelings you're having. That's why each and every week, the Elementary Music Teacher Podcast will provide you with solo and guest episodes that will help you realize you're not alone in your music teaching journey. Throughout each episode, my goal is for you to be able to walk away with actionable steps and ideas to help you feel like you're ready to take on the new week with whatever challenges may be thrown your way. Hi, I'm your host, Jessica Paresta, and I'm so glad you're here. Whether you're at home, in your car, in the shower, or wherever else you're listening, grab your cup of coffee or whatever other beverage is nearby and listen in to the Elementary Music Teacher Podcast. I am so excited to be joined today by Juliana Conti. We are going to be discussing why decolonizing music education matters. She is so passionate about this topic. We have been in many clubhouse rooms together, and I'm super excited to have her on the podcast. So I want to start out by letting you introduce yourself to the listeners before we dive in with today's conversation.
Thank you, Jessica. I'm really excited to be here. And to all the listeners, I'm really excited that you have found Jessica's show because it's fantastic. I've enjoyed listening to it myself, and it's an honor to be here. I am a PhD candidate currently at the University of Washington in Seattle, and I study music education. And a lot of the times when I introduce myself that way, people's first request is to ask my instrument, because there's a lot about music education that people don't know. And I get excited to explain that I'm actually in research and that we look at ways of diversifying our music education classrooms, and that music education in and of itself does not have to be instrument based, and it does not have to look like what we are familiar with, especially those of us who have been privileged enough to go through a music education system in public schools. Mm-hmm. So for the past 6 or so years, I've been in graduate school studying and working and conducting research so that I can understand the psychological and the sociological, as well as cognitive underpinnings of how we function with music in our day-to-day lives and how we can optimize the learning experience for our students in our classrooms so that music can be more than just learning an instrument, because it's got the capacity for so much more than that. And I know this because I did teach elementary music education for about 5 years before going back to grad school. So I was able to write my own curriculum around world music, and I found that my students were so enthralled in learning about other people and learning about other cultures in a way that didn't perpetuate stereotypes or other ways of thinking about others as different and other in that negative capacity, but instead looking at the uniquenesses that we've got between us and things that we share in common across the world. And I found that, you know, the more that I interact with people, the more I see that people believe in the importance of diverse music and that we should be listening to a world of music. And so I'm excited that as my career continues to unfold, I will be working in this capacity somehow moving forward.
We could literally just end the episode right there because that was amazing. Like, thanks, we're done. Goodbye. No, but that was so good. Everything you're saying, it's just so true. I love it. And you're right. There's so many misconceptions about music education. And I think a lot of it is just not knowing. I feel like that with elementary music in general, because I think back to, and I'm sure you can as well, my elementary music experience as a kid, it's way different than you find in elementary music classroom today.
Totally.
It just does not look the same at all. There was a lot of sitting and singing from a book. Not a lot of moving around, not a lot of engaging and learning about music from other cultures. It was just, you come in, you sing a few songs around the piano, and you leave. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but I remember, like, when I became a teacher, knowing that is not the approach I wanted to take. It shouldn't just be about memorizing songs by rote, or like you said, It's not just about the instruments. It's about experiencing music and diversifying what you're teaching your students, which is so important. So let's go there. When we talk about diversity in music education, I have talked to, and I know you have too, so many music teachers who feel kind of stuck in a way with, not that they don't have good intentions, but it's, I don't know if I'm doing this right, or I want to do this. I want to bring more diversity into my classroom, but I'm afraid of doing it wrong. So what advice do you have around that for teachers listening?
Fabulous question. I did a study on this topic. I did a grounded theory study, and I interviewed 13 teachers from different elementary classrooms across the country, and from both inside the general elementary classroom as well as the music classroom. And I wanted to know about their experience with culturally diverse music education. And for general elementary teachers, that's a whole other podcast that I would love to do someday, about the comfort of bringing in, or lack thereof, of bringing in music when teachers are not trained musically or have the certificate to teach music. And for music teachers, there's a lot of apprehension I found because of fear. And fear was the most common trait across teachers who did know the importance of culturally diverse music, but didn't feel like they had the background or training to be able to do it justice. And a lot of them instead chose the safe path, which is that you just don't. You follow the book that you're given by the district, and you know, whoever wrote those books must know what they're doing, because they're published, they're handed to you, and that's what your students are going to get. And fair enough, because, you know, if we're not trained within our teacher preparation programs to be able to manage culturally diverse music, then we have to go the extra 100 miles to decentralize ourselves from the curriculum and then find where our place is again. And I would say that that's really the first step, is you just have to get over yourself. It's not about you. And, you know, the two things that are going to get in our way the most are going to be privilege, when we don't understand the experience of cultural dissonance, where you're in a place and you're the only person that doesn't look like everyone else, or the only person that doesn't have the same experiences or the same socioeconomic status or the same access to education or training or whatever it is. And so you have to remove yourself from the conversation initially in order to centralize your students, because it's really about them at the end of the day. Why else do we do what we do, right? And then you also have to put that layer of whiteness in there, because as privileged white teachers, and you know, our teaching force, what, for elementary level is 95% women or something like that, and predominantly white. And so we've got a huge, I don't know, I would say like wall between our student population and our teachers population. And we know through research that by having role models that you can see yourself in, you can envision yourself following paths that you may not otherwise have considered. And so when we are in a classroom and our students don't look like we do, or we don't look like they do, then they may not understand what their own capacity is, because they may not envision themselves being able to do multiple things. And so, you know, the teacher is the facilitator. It's not the god of the classroom. It's not the omniscient being that knows everything and is responsible for teaching them about the world. We really are supposed to bring information in and help students understand their place in the world by exposing them to different people and different ideas and different subject matter. So you first think about your students, who's in your classroom. Then you remove yourself from that equation so that you can remove any defensiveness that you have instinctually. And those are hard. I mean, for me, this took a number of years to be able to master just those first two steps, right? Because I grew up in a neighborhood that was predominantly white. I went through a white orchestra for most of my life. And that's the world I knew. And so when I went to go teach in the classroom and my students didn't care about the music that I was taught growing up, I had to completely re-envision how I was going to teach music and what music even means. So mm-hmm. then that means for the third step, you do have to not only remove yourself from the content of the classroom, but you also have to reconsider what the concept of music is. And a great example is that I got my bachelor's in music, plain, flat out. However, the program itself was entirely Western based. So the messaging that we put behind our curriculum is, what is good music? What is valuable music? And if our students don't recognize what we're bringing in the classroom at all, and we're not making connections to their lives, then it's virtually meaningless, because they aren't going to be able to connect or understand what it is we're trying to show them, especially if we're reinforcing this Western culture of music that's not as relevant to our young kids anymore. Mm-hmm. And I sound like an old fart. I'm 32, so I'm not, you know, I'm not up there, but I definitely feel mm-hmm. like an old fart sometimes having to say these things out loud, even though I feel like these should be some expectations by now.
Yeah.
Especially given the past year of COVID, and right. especially given how the forefront of racism is in our country and around the world. But we have to really think about our own position within the classroom, and our kids grow up receiving and processing and living by these messages. And yeah. so, you know, in order to diversify your classroom, you have to rethink what you're teaching. What does music mean? And one of the reasons why diversifying the music classroom matters so much is because we are presenting options. Mm. If being an instrumental teacher matters to you, if students learning how to play instruments matters to you, the instrument itself is not the pedestal to which we pray. It is the tool through which we express ourselves and understand others. And so really, by exposing students to different styles of music, especially those which have been systemically oppressed or abused, much like early blues and jazz, which were then commandeered by white people who profited off of them. Elvis Presley is one of those. Don't come at me. love him. But, you know, it's out. He's notorious for taking songs that were created by black blues singers, especially women, and then profiting off of them himself and not thoroughly paying back the profits that he earned. And so getting back to the diversification of our classrooms, students need to hear what their instruments can do. And students need to hear what they're capable of doing as well. And they can be really stinking creative if you give them yeah. the world of options that they deserve. And so that's one of the reasons why we have to change up what we present to our kids, because I'm sorry, but not every violinist should be in the symphony. And our job is not to save the life of the symphony. And this is coming from a classically trained violist. Mm-hmm. I love the symphony, but if I had been given another option at any time in my musical education career, I definitely would have chosen something else. And to this day, I probably would have a much stronger sense of identity with my own instrument, because, you know, the viola is pretty much classical.
Yeah. Yeah. Girl, I can relate to that so hard. I'm a classically trained pianist and yeah. love my teachers, but same. I went through a Western music education. And not only that, I never really learned any other styles of music, even going through college. I started right. as a piano performance major, and then I switched to music education my sophomore year. But I had a great teacher. But she didn't diversify any of the music I was learning, any different styles of music. It was all classical. And I mean, so to this day, I'm just a little irritated that I'm like, why did I not dive into a little bit more music? Not that I can't now.
Yeah, but that's the sad part, right? Because mm-hmm. you've missed decades of exploration. Mm-hmm. And they're the gatekeepers. And we are now the inherited gatekeepers.
Yes.
And we have the option to perpetuate and reinforce these standards that have been passed down to us, or change it up because we know what we wish we had. Mm-hmm. And we know what our kids deserve more. And nothing bothers me more than the private lesson industry for this very reason, because you have this legacy and this, what is it called? When you've got horse breeding that goes back to people or the horses that have like the most amazing DNA and they're known
like
for
breeders.
Pedigree.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I know the word. I just couldn't find it.
Yeah. I don't really use that word very often, but I will say that when it comes to the music community, pedigree and lineage is so unfortunately important because, you know, this person had this private teacher and their private teacher had that private teacher,
right,
which means that if you have this teacher for you, then you've got this whole pedigree of excellence and you're going to be a phenomenal musician, probably either in the classical community or in jazz or in band, but predominantly Western groups. However, that becomes so narrowed that they don't get the time to explore other options unless those gatekeeper teachers encourage it. Yeah. And I was never encouraged to explore with my instrument. In fact, I would practice by secret in my room. I would listen to songs and then I would learn to play them on my instrument and write down the notation so that over time I wouldn't forget it. And I would lie to my parents that I was practicing my scales or etudes or whatever it was because I hated practicing.
Yeah.
And instead I wanted to learn this other music, but I got this clear message that it wasn't okay for me to spend time doing anything other than what I was supposed to be doing to learn this instrument. And I'm filled with so much resentment and regret at that because you don't know what you don't know.
Oh yeah.
So and true. And now I do know, and this is literally what I specialize in. Mm-hmm. And my awareness really propels me into wanting a better opportunity for kids than I had because, you know, there were so many red flags. And my parents are both from other countries outside the US. I'm first generation American, which means even as like a white first gen American, there are so many other kids who relate to this even more because they're either first gen or half gen or for one and a half generation, either Mexican American or Persian American. Mm-hmm. There's so many different demographics in our country that we just cannot continue this ignorance anymore.
Yeah, agreed. When you talked about college training, I felt like a fish out of water when I got my first position. I've shared it on this podcast before. It was a school that was 98% Black kids. And I am walking in with my training being, you know, there's that one methods class where it teaches you Kadai Orff, but it glances over it super fast. That we covered that. We covered all classroom management procedures, all the different folk songs, what to teach to different grade levels. It wasn't until I got in there and realized 90% probably of what I had learned to do with my students, it wasn't going to work. And yeah. It was just very eye-opening to me.
A very common issue. And, you know, I think for anyone who's listening, who's considering becoming a music teacher, there's also a few things to think about then in credentialing programs, because you've got different lengths of programs. If you go through a bachelor 4-year music education credentialing program, you're going to have 4 years of training versus a 1-year credentialing program on top of whatever bachelor's you have, or a 1-year master's in credential or a 2-year master's in credential, because everything has to get smushed mm-hmm. into that space. And this is very same reason why elementary teachers don't touch music, because mm-hmm. if they get any exposure to music and the arts, yeah. it's maybe half of one of the classes that they have to take in everything. And they talk about rhythm and notation. And I'm sorry, but that's not relevant.
Yeah.
Like, why would kids care about learning a whole note in an elementary general classroom when that teacher has so many other options to expose students to music through, like mm-hmm. just play music from other parts of the world and have discussions. But we're just, our credentialing programs are not set up for the expectations that our kids and our communities have now. And Teresa Volk, who people laugh at me because I reference this book all the time. She has this book. I think it's like Multicultural Music Education. It's a history book, and she explores decades of music education in the United States. And she makes very clearly a statement that change in our educational system takes about 30 years to make.
Oh, wow.
And I'm hopeful that after COVID, it's become faster because we've become so upended that, you know, where is any normality in our systems anymore?
Right.
But it really shows you that we are up against a mountain when it comes to not only finding out what the expectations are and how to do them, but then implementing them and training our teachers and providing them with the confidence to be able to continue to train themselves. Mm-hmm. And that's where we don't need to memorize 100 songs to go into the classroom. We need to learn research tools and skills to be able to teach ourselves how to build curriculum that really matches our students better.
Because
that fear factor is merely a lack of experience and information at something that really takes research and practice, which is what we do as musicians anyways.
Oh, totally. You mentioned earlier too about being a facilitator in your classroom. And yes. I love that because I'm a huge proponent of that as well, because your students can teach you just as much as you're teaching them.
Oh, and they better.
You know, because if you're just standing there just doing direct instruction all the time, but you're never getting feedback, you're never asking a student who's maybe from India, for example, tell me about your culture. Why don't you tell me about the music from your culture without singling them out and making them feel awkward, of course, but right. let them bring experience because they're going to have more to teach about music from their culture than you could.
Yeah.
So facilitate these conversations. And I think that naturally happens and kiddos will be comfortable in your classroom having conversations and experiencing different music. But when you start opening those doors for them to do that. So I love that you brought that up, the facilitator, because I know going back to training, not to harp on that, but it is, you know, a lot of what you learn about being a teacher is the stand up here and instruct, stand right. and instruct. I loved it because when people would walk by my classroom, it sounded like utter chaos in there, but it was like organized chaos. Honestly, it was
so loud,
you know, small group, everything going on. Our YouTube, okay, we're going to do partners with this. This is what I want you to do. And you're going to be doing this. And then we're coming back together as a group to do this. And I loved it. You had to walk by my classroom to get to the lunchroom and the teachers' faces passing by were like,
oh, they would run from me. I would walk into their classroom for music and they'd be like, okay, bye. And they would go off somewhere else. And I will say boom whackers were part of that encouragement.
Oh, yes.
But it's, you know, it's very true. And that's one of the reasons why we're also so little understood, because the way that we have to teach our subject is interactive in nature and it's loud and it requires conversation. It requires music to be played for pure listening purposes. And it requires instruments and it requires exploration. And the facilitator, I think, is the most important way of looking at the teacher's role, because the top-down method doesn't work at all. Mm-hmm. I'm not really convinced that it ever really worked. And if you go to countries that learn by rote and memorization, it's very militaristic, and you know, music is founded on creativity and emotional. Emotional expression. That shouldn't have been so difficult. But anyways, when I say top down, what I mean is that the teacher's on top, the kids are on the bottom, and all directions come from the top and order the kids to do whatever they want or whatever the teacher wants. Whereas a student-centered classroom create space for the students to also make decisions and make requests and process things on their own time. And it really makes the teacher have to listen, watch, pay attention, and find patterns of interest from their students. Yeah. Because if you're not catering your instruction to your students in any classroom, then you're betraying the very nature of education, which is the teaching of learning. We're not expecting that our kids walk out having memorized everything we teach them. What we're hoping is that they've had a positive enough experience to process and retain some of the information at least, but also to want more. And for music, that matters so much. And we know that as music teachers, because clearly we followed the steps from our own music performance career into teaching. And we see the light that comes through the eyes of our kids that really connect with it. Mm-hmm. But if you only have one or two kids that are connecting, then you also have a big problem. Mm-hmm. And I think this gets to the second reason why diversifying our music education curriculum matters so much. The first one being because students need to know what exists in the world and needs to know that music is not solely what they experience in the classroom. It's not limited to that. But also because students are going through identity formation and exploration their entire education lives, K-12 up to undergrad. And even for me, like as a graduate student, I'm still wondering who I am and what I want in life and like what I'm doing.
Oh, yeah.
And what kind of music I want to learn more about. And so we know that the most important developmental age is like up to 10 years old. And those are the times where students are really trying to figure out who they are and how they fit into our society. And their brains are picking up so much information and creating so many different neural pathways that bridge different parts of their brain and their understanding of different subjects and the physical and the immaterial in life. So culturally speaking, they're making a lot of sense out of the world at that time, but they're not going to make much sense out of it if they don't connect with it at all. And considering how oppressive our education has been for the past 100 years around issues of race in particular, I mean, we know that we've got textbooks that have lied about the slaves and have called them workers. Yeah. That have erased entire portions of history. Mm-hmm. And our teachers have not been trained to have thorough discussions around race in a way that is both productive and healthy and acceptable. And so a lot of these conversations haven't happened. And yet you look at our youngest generation right now, and it's like they've been scratching at the walls for more for years. And I wish that I'd had those kind of conversations as a kid. And so for anyone who is part of a population that is systemically oppressed, or is marginalized in any way, then providing different styles of music, exposure, and opportunity in a classroom provides them more opportunity to figure out who they are and what they mm-hmm. want and how they fit in with this world and, you know, how to be a kind person and how to stand up for yourself and how to stand up for others. Music isn't only music. It's the ability to learn so many different parts of being a person.
Yes.
And that can go both ways because I don't know, many people don't know this, but after 9/11, there was a surge in patriotism in our music classrooms as a way of reinforcing that, hey, we are one, we are American. So let's sing all these incredibly American songs and let's teach our kids about, you know, our resilient nature. However, unfortunately, in that same time, what they managed to do was erase a lot of other music in their curriculums. Mm. And it perpetuated Islamophobia and it reduced exposure to diverse music because we were so focused on one thing that we ignored the other. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's important for us to react to current events, absolutely, but to contextualize them. And that's not something I think that we've been very good at over the years necessarily. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing that because obviously in the past year and a half, the riots, police violence, all of these issues have come to a head and we're seeing that racism never left our country.
Right.
And it's seeped into every piece of our education that we now need to comb through step by step. And it's going to take us a lot of work, but it takes mm-hmm. conversations like those we're having now to highlight that our subject isn't perfect. It's mm-hmm. been part of the problem and it can be part of the solution.
Oh, yeah. You're talking, and I taught in Tulsa. And a lot of that came out recently, right?
Yeah, I bet.
I taught like right there, right where all this went down. And I had no idea. I grew up in Tulsa. I taught in Tulsa. And it wasn't now that I'm living in Arkansas where I had no idea. So I broke down one night just hysterically crying And I'm going to tear up now because the fact that a lot of my students' parents and grandparents knew the stories, it just wasn't talked about. And when you say things that are left out of the history books, that is exactly what I said to my husband that night. As I said, I have lived there all these years. I taught these kids whose families firsthand experienced this. And I had no idea. I was never, ever taught this. And I went through the Oklahoma school system. So how many other things? I mean, honestly, I don't know the number, but I know it's got to be a heck of a lot that are not taught to the kids or are the teachers, I should say, that we are not aware of is what I meant. And so it just brought tears to my eyes because I'm not perfect, but I really felt like I did a great job of making sure my classroom was inclusive of all learners, that we explored so many different types of music and different ways of learning music. But it was almost like, if I had only known, I would have been even more compassionate and understanding and aware. Yeah. But like you said earlier, we don't know what we don't know. And that's just so frustrating because I'm like, that's my hometown. And how can I not even know? I'm drove by the street every day.
Yeah.
And I didn't know. It's crazy.
And it takes a lot of vulnerability to be able to talk about that. And, you know, vulnerability is one of the most important qualities of a strong teacher, because we have to be uncomfortable. We have to be vulnerable. We have to be willing to take risks. And, you know, when I talked about those teachers that I interviewed in my study, the biggest factor that I found was that you really just have to be strong enough to know what is good enough. You have to try. Obviously, that's the first step. If you don't try, nothing venture, nothing gained. Mm-hmm. But if you try and you're trying to do it good enough where you're looking up information, you're building your curriculum on a regular basis to try to better fit your students, you're acknowledging that maybe you're a first year teacher, or maybe you just moved and you're in a low income school that doesn't have the financial resources you're used to, or maybe you just went through your own divorce. I don't know. There's so many reasons for us to get sidetracked enough to not provide the energy that our students deserve. But if you're trying, you know, good enough can be good enough right now. And that's for you and your students and your principal and your community to decide, but you have to be trying. Yeah. And it's not necessarily our fault that we grow up in an area where the concept of history is shrouded in secrecy and is told by the people who want to control what we know.
Yeah.
And this is not me trying to like spout conspiracy theory.
Oh, right. No,
this is legitimate. Yeah. Our textbook industry is a perfect case of this. If you look at the connections between politicians and textbook companies, and there's all different kinds of trades that go on about what is included in textbooks. And especially if you look at the fact that a lot of textbooks are produced in Texas, then you connect the political landscape of Texas and their unwillingness to accept a lot of the history that this country has done to, you know, people throughout our history. And we have to take these things seriously, because as we've seen, we can't just sit back and think everything's being figured out. Racism is solved. Mm-hmm. No, we each have our role. And you may not have been able to know, based on your environment and the resources you didn't have access to, that where you grew up was actually the center of a brutal history. However, now that you know that, the way that you teach can change, because you can teach your students to question what they're told. You can teach your students to investigate, and you can teach your students how to find what they love and make it a bigger part of their life. It, again, we don't live in a binary system. We can live on a spectrum, and we can have, we can be both like the beneficial part of our society, or the part that continues these disruptive patterns for our students. And all of that is in degrees. And it's really up to you how much you throw yourself in and what you're willing to do.
Yes. I love you said diversifying the music classroom matters so much because we're exposing kiddos to different options. Yes. So that leads me right into my next question, which is music teachers who want to make their classrooms more equitable for their students. We've already talked about diversifying the types of songs you teach, but what other ways can a music teacher make their classroom more equitable for the students they teach?
Great question. You know, students deserve a lot more time to talk and to think and to be bored. I was bored a lot as a kid, and that gave me, it forced me really to do things with my time and to find what I enjoyed. And I got to form a lot of my own ideas about the world and try things when I did interact with people. And I know that our students right now, our younger generation, we have a lot of kids that are just so heavily scheduled and so many extracurriculars on their plate. And sometimes it's good to just have a chill classroom where you listen to some music and you talk about it. You learn what other people think about it, and you provide different avenues for experiencing music. Mm-hmm. If you can, go on a field trip. If you can't, bring the field trip to you. There's so much available online for you to be able to put in front of your students. And again, we're talking about student-centered, not top-down. Don't just talk at your students. Give them the chance to experience music differently, which includes dance, and that includes theater, that includes videos from maybe different websites. And I mean, caution with YouTube, obviously, for any teacher that's tried to incorporate YouTube in your classroom, you could have any set of horrors go down between the commercials and, you know, who knows what. But it's also an incredibly powerful tool because you've got people from all over the world that are putting resources out there directly from places where a style of music has existed for thousands of years. And spending a lot of time maybe asking your students what they're interested in and trying to provide different ways of experiencing it through maybe learning a dance together, maybe learning to sing together, maybe doing a trip around the world virtually, maybe journaling about how they feel when they listen to certain music. Talk about the physics of how different materials and instruments create different sounds and textures. Have people trade instruments and see what the challenge is. And don't be afraid to have difficult conversations, because I have seen classrooms that cover genres like blues or jazz and don't have those challenging conversations because, you know, slavery has to be a part of the conversation around the blues. It just has to, because they're so connected that it's difficult to understand a lot of the origins of blues and rock, for that matter, without understanding human suffering. And it's no service to our students by protecting them from human suffering, given how common it is around the world, and given that we all participate in this world as individuals with choices. And I think that's why I keep bringing up listening and talking. One thing I didn't mention is that I specialize in the psychology and sociology of music listening as a form of teaching and learning, because it's a very underutilized tool in a classroom, in any classroom, but especially in the music education classroom, where for people who do instrumental teaching, and that includes chorus, then we spend a lot of time learning pieces, but we don't necessarily spend a lot of time listening. And for anyone who's trying to become a performer or a musician or even play as a hobbyist, you have to be able to listen. And listening goes across from music into also people. And equity means access and accountability and, I don't know, just opportunity to learn. And I personally get very emotional about this now, because I think about students who just aren't given any chance to know what else is out there. Mm-hmm. And to me, equity means exploration. And I don't mean, it's difficult, because this is we're getting into a lot of heady territory now, because this is a philosophically challenging topic when you talk about exploration, because at the core of colonialism and colonization is exploration. The idea that you can go and learn about things and just take them and make them your own, and identify them and define them as you want. Whereas currently, I think that exploration is more of a seeing what options there are out there, but still recognizing that even within our own social behavior, we're so bound to our own history of colonization that we don't really know when to stop. And we don't really know when we're doing things that perpetuate that. And so equity in a classroom means constantly thinking about your place in the classroom, also decentralizing yourself from the material and being able to think critically about what you're presenting, how you're presenting it, and maybe your role in that. Because if you're a white teacher in a classroom of predominantly not white students, then you do have a role in how they see the world. And you do have a responsibility to bring other people in, people that they might identify with more, whether that's video or in person, because we all know that finances are a huge barrier to equity. There are so many creative ways to do this. And we've got culture bearers in every city who would love to come in classrooms and talk to kids about what they play and what they do. And we just can't spend every day in our classroom playing and practicing the same things.
Yes.
Yeah. So whatever you think is different and odd and strange for your classroom is probably what you should be doing.
Right. Pull yourself out of that comfort zone. Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Oh, I've loved this conversation. You have definitely brought so many great points where I know music teachers are going to definitely be listening to this many times, or I hope you do, because there's so much value from what Juliana has talked about today. And I want you to re-listen to it and take notes, and then not just take notes, but process through how can you honestly apply what you have learned into your classroom. It's not an overnight fix. It's not something you're going to know how to do right away, but taking that first step, keep moving forward, keep trying, make the effort, and get to know your students, get to know those kiddos. Be okay with failing. Be okay with making mistakes, because you will. you will make mistakes. You're going to be, oh, that is not how I thought that was going to go. It happens. It's okay. But they know. They know if you're showing up and you're trying, and you're trying to be a part of their world. They really do.
They really do. And you have to be willing to ask for help. I mean, every district has resources. Your local university has resources. Universities that aren't local but are online have resources. And I will say a fantastic series of resources are, first of all, Smithsonian Folkways has an online database of music from decades around the world.
Yes, it's amazing.
It's just incredible. They also have curricula. So you can go based on country. They've got a map. You can go by different cities and by different countries. You can search by genre. And they've got lesson plans that have been built by ethnomusicologists and musicians and music educators for these different styles of music to bring into your classroom. Because no, we don't expect you to know how to do any of this. We expect you to try. We expect you to be uncomfortable and to be willing to do this once you realize how pervasive racism and oppression and our whitewashed classrooms are. And this is something that you can manage, and you never know when your student is going to grow up to be that next groundbreaking person who takes what we're working on and propels it forward even more.
Oh yeah.
And I just get so excited that these conversations happen with you and with other people that we've had the opportunity to talk with on Clubhouse. And this reminds me of the second resource I wanted to mention was World Music Pedagogy book series by Patricia Campbell. She is my graduate advisor. So I'm not, this is not a paid for advertisement, but when I found my program, it was because I did this 1 week, 40-hour workshop at the University of Washington, and they've got these now across the country and online, where we talked about world music pedagogy. We broke down how to implement culturally diverse music in the classroom. It's hands-on, it's conversational, and it's done so by multiple culture bearers who can speak directly about their own cultures and the educational process of incorporating it into different curriculum. So if you just Google what it is that you need and what you're looking for, you can find these resources. But if you don't look, you're not going to find it. Yeah. People aren't going to knock on your door and be like, hey, let's all work together to be better now. They're not going to come to you.
Right.
And if your school does come to you, that doesn't mean that the resources that they're providing is even what you personally need in your own learning environment.
Yes.
Be your own advocate.
Oh, I love that. Be your own advocate. That is so good. Juliana, let everybody know where they can connect with you after this episode. And the links you just shared, I will include those in the show notes as well. So make sure you guys look for those. Yes.
Definitely. Yeah. So you can find me on Twitter and I believe Instagram at gradgal. And on Instagram, it's gradgal_me for music education.
Awesome.
And Clubhouse.
Yes, I have not been as active on there as I used to be, but I'm trying to get back on there. It's just one of those you can't do everything things, you know.
No. You are a superwoman, but crazy. Everyone has their limits.
Oh, yes. Well, thank you so much. This conversation has been great. I really appreciate your time and for coming on the podcast, and this has been amazing. So thank you so much
for the opportunity, Jessica. I really appreciate it.
Well, hey there. Thank you so much for listening into the Elementary Music Teacher Podcast. There is an exclusive Facebook group just for listeners of this podcast and any elementary music teacher called the Elementary Music Teacher Community Facebook group. Come on over and join us there where we have conversations around the podcast episodes and encourage each other each and every week. And also head to my website, thedomesticmusician.com. I have some free resources there that you can download to help you gain traction in your classroom today, as well as the blog and the membership site and all kinds of other goodies to help you keep going in your music teaching journey. I cannot wait to keep connecting with you and encouraging you and spurring you on in your journey of teaching elementary music. Hang in there, have an amazing week, and I will see you soon.